Roger Weaver, are you in Kansas anymore? No, I guess you're not. You hold up the valley, and our radio station down there is, you know, we have a transmitter in Corvallis. You listen to KVU once in a while, don't
yes.
you?
Well, oh, yes.
I hope
we
so.
Get KVU down there.
Well, I hope so.
Sure. Thanks to Michael Papadopoulos and his good efforts.
Yeah, Michael Papadopoulos and Yaney and a lot of people. And
that's right.
We were talking in the car a minute ago, and we were, you know, you got good air conditioning. But, Roger, we were talking about your earlier books, and I was wondering last when you were on The Talking Earth with me. But it's been a while, didn't we? We figured that out, didn't we?
It was 16 years ago.
But, you know, Roger, I want to honor a book I missed, Reading the Stones. That came out in 2003.
Yes.
And Poetry Enterprises. The book we're going to focus on tonight is The Ladder of Desire, and I really want to notes in the back, bio. Roger Weaver's poems have been published widely in the Massachusetts Review, Greenfield, Hubbub, North American Review. You did something for Press 22, and this kind of caught my eye, Roger, and maybe the listeners don't realize this, with Joseph Bruhack of Greenfield Review.
Yes, Joseph Bruchek.
Bruchek, is that how you say
yes.
his name? Yeah.
Yes.
You co-edited an anthology of poems in English from Africa, Asia, and the Caribbean called Aftermath. And now...
That was the first book.
Roger, you've got, say it for me, Totopus.
Totopus, yes.
Ninth, what? This is the ninth?
Ninth issue of a magazine that takes different cultures and marginalized poets in those cultures. For instance, the current one is... Hungarian poetry, and we have there some of the poets who are in there are women who've been marginalized, and also the gypsy poets of Hungary. The gypsies have a very sad situation now in those countries of Eastern Europe because they're more and more required, as Hungary requires them, to give permanent addresses. And this, of course, destroys a lifestyle which is nomadic. So...
It's an incredible... I wonder if anyone in the state of Oregon realizes this Poetry International and the website. You've written that down for me here, but it's...
It's www.poetryenterprises.org. O-R-G.
All of you out there should pick this up. Roger, besides your new book called The Ladder of Desire, and which we're going to get immediately into, I didn't know you were doing all this work. And you've been, and you've just got back from Nicaragua, haven't
yes,
you?
That's right.
And we're going to maybe talk about that. So so let's begin with your book, The Ladder of Desire. How would you like to begin? The cover is a little suggestive.
I begin with a quotation from Rumi.
Okay.
A lover's lament surpasses all other cries of pain, from the Mathnavi. And the Rumi quote is very deliberate, of course, and goes into the notion that mystical union with God, as we know the great Sufi writer of the Sufi literature is Rumi, and the mystical union with God is associated with drunkenness. And... it's not that we're advocating drinking. It's that in that tradition... The ecstatic tradition, drunkenness was aligned with mystical union with God. So I'm going to read a poem called The Great Drunkenness. The more blessed he who loves, the less blessed the beloved. I dreamed of traveling with you through cities, climes, Amsterdam, Madrid, and countries where you shone like a sun. I did not dream of being drunken outside the tavern door, where you could not decide between the many and the few. Tomorrow, before sunrise, I shall be sober and steal away to where the lamp you lit still burns.
It's a beautiful poem, Roger.
Thank you.
It's, let's the Ladder of Desire. You have the cartography. Where you know you're doing a good queuing here. Where would you like to go? I have some choices.
Well, cartography is
that's
yeah.
That's
that one you.
Well, I like that poem, and it seemed to me a follow up. It's on page
eight.
8, okay.
The maps are tangible. Fingers read the peaks and valleys, rippled textures of lakes and seas. Recognize deserts from their fine, granular feel. This is the country of the blind. The relentless male rises, prods into the female's dark conductivity, and life breaks forth like birdsong, energizing the insomniac, the early rising poet's little train of words that gains momentum from spark struck on the flint of dark.
Roger, a lot of these poems are about friendship, male friendship, but what else? I mean, we were talking on the friendship itself without sex is very romantic, very intimate, and we get polarized right now with this gay and heterosexual polarity, which I don't exactly believe in the way most people talk about it.
Yes.
And what we were talking about a little bit on the phone is that your love for someone doesn't have to manifest itself in a physical act necessarily with them, does it? I don't think so.
No, but if it does.
If it does, that's well and good. But I had just wondered, you know, a little bit if this book was sort of a coming out book, but it isn't quite that, is it?
It's no.
No, it's you've written these other books, and you spent a lot of time in Greece, and there's a Gavafi poem that
right.
I really like, and
well, our allegiance, it seems to me, is to the
tell
people,
me.
to the individuals,
to the relationship with an individual. Yeah,
it's to the person. And so, what I wanted was not to be writing about the mechanics of physicality, but which just separates us from desire. And yet when we read the great Gavafi poems, what we're in the presence of desire that's become actually almost like cast in marble, like the great statues of the 5th century B.C.
It transcends generations and time.
It does, absolutely.
And as I see, this is on page 13 for Gavafi, you spent some time in Istanbul, and that's how this poem begins. Would you talk a little bit about that to introduce
us? Well, you see, Gavafi, even though he's a great...
He's from Alexandria, I thought.
Great Greek poet, and he lived in Alexandria a great deal. When he was a young man and actually living out the life that he celebrates when he's an older man, when he was in Alexandria and wrote about them later, these experiences later, the young man, the young Gavafi, who lived these wonderful experiences that he writes about, was living in Istanbul with his family then, as a young man. I went to the church where he and his family worshipped in the Greek Orthodox Cathedral there on the Istiklal. And so Istanbul, I've been there 3 times in the last 2 years, and it becomes another character in this book where my friend lives. So I would like to read this poem for Gavafi. Istanbul, city of your voluptuary halcyon years, of meetings shared upon beds in silence, and departures with names unspoken, of returning to homes where candles burned before icons of saints, city of the great Orthodox services that taught you shame, city that preserved your past and hers in the brine of memory.
I went through some of my collection of things, and Gavafi is just a T.S. Eliot loved him. He lived around he wrote around the First World War
yes.
about that time.
Turn of the century of the 20th century.
And he's so tasteful in writing about romantic or sexual things. I just thought I would share a Gavafi poem translated by Ray Delvin, and this book had a W.H. Auden introduction. Their beginning. The fulfillment of their deviant sensual delight is done. They rose from the mattress and they dress hurriedly without speaking. They leave the house separately, furtively, and as they walk somewhat uneasily on the street, it seems as if they suspect that something about them betrays into what kind of bed they fell a little while back, but how the life of the artist has gained tomorrow, the next day, years later, the vigorous verses will be composed that had their beginning here. In other words, romance and sexuality are transformed into art.
Absolutely.
And philosophy. Is that, yeah. And I see that in your book, The Ladder of Desire, Roger
Thank
Weaver.
You. Thank you for seeing it. Good. Good. I would like to read in that spirit two poems about, from the book, about the friendship, the great friendship. This is called Rehearsal Memoriam. That you, the darling of the world's eye, should die, confounds me totally. Soldier of fortune, refusing to join either side, till now you were able to make brothers of men in conflict, who sheltered you, fed you, passed you on to safe hands. God save you from the war I fear this time will kill you. The thought breaks me down. Should you not come home, I shall point a sentinel to your life. Here he was, here he danced and laughed, drank wine, held us, loved poetry and carpets, motorcycled in moonlight, caught a tornado and held on. You have not lived if you cannot remember him alive. And the other one is called Old Friends. And this one...
Well, we have plenty of time. You know, that young man was in Afghanistan. And he came back alive.
He did return.
But was he psychologically wounded? I mean, you know, this is a political book. There are political things in this book. And we have to wonder about the damage being done to this young generation and them coming back, if they're still alive, wounded and mutilated and cut up from the war. So, so he came back okay.
Came back safely.
Yeah, it's a wonderful, Rehearsal Memoriam is a wonderful poem in this book. So,
thank you, Will. Okay.
And you said you were going, okay.
This one is just called Old Friends, and then we'll be able to get off this book and its theme. But the friendship is such a dear thing, particularly as we get older. Old friends, as if by code, into the fog they go, one by one becomes silence. Gradually the phone calls, the Christmas cards don't appear. You know what it all means, the slipping up and swinging out, free, embarrassment of body, the stickiness gone. And when I go to live in the house of the sun, will I be alone or with them? One.
One, joined, unified with the love, the human loves of our lives. Well, we join with the friends, the loved ones when we die. It's a great question. We don't know for sure, but we hope so. We really hope so. The Ladder of Desire, and you know, actually, we can move on to something else, but, I have a note here for Peter, page 15, wonderful poem.
Yes.
Do you want to do that one?
Yes.
Should we do one more? We've got 10 or 12 minutes at least here, Roger, and I see the people from Sedition are here, Doug Posey and Stephen Alexander. But who was Peter?
Peter is a really good friend of mine, and so this poem is just simply called For Peter. Today I reached for a book, your gift, Return of the Great Goddess. I read it hungrily and found you there, you who love women, who understand with your heart and know how to listen. What gender is the soul? I once asked. You pondered, but not for long, knowing you were whole, male and female, a childlike adult who knows how to live with animals and be one with them. And as I read your book today, I lay sick upon the thick pile silk and wool rug and stitched a mend in the wool cap my mother made, a strong woman who could create things, pies, amazing sweaters, and robes. And towards the end, so many washcloths. Remembering her deft fingers, I threaded the needle in the old way and thought on us all, knitted to bone, warmed by the threads around us.
It's a beautiful poem too, Roger. Roger Weaver, reading from The Ladder of Desire. You taught at Portland State, and you've been involved. Oregon State. That was my my head popping in there. I was at Portland State. You taught at Oregon State for many years. You're retired now, but you're still doing all kinds of things. And you just recently were in Nicaragua, and you have your diary here, and you have a couple of Nicaragua poems, I think. But why did you go to Nicaragua?
I went for two reasons. I wanted to learn Spanish because the children in the schools where I volunteer in Corvallis more and more are speaking Spanish, and I think it behooves all of us to learn this language. These people need understanding. They need us to hear them, and since they're willing to do work that we're not willing to do, we treat them with respect. So I went to learn the language, and I wasn't there long enough to. I have to keep at it, of course, coming back. And then the second reason is that Nicaragua is the second poorest country in the Western Hemisphere, the poorest being Haiti. And I was interested in how the volunteer groups there. I'm a Quaker, and
I'm proud of you, Roger.
And I'm interested in how the volunteer groups there network to overcome enormous lacks in their system. During the 1980s, of course, the Reagan administration helped to overthrow the government through covert action, and
the Contra war, wasn't it?
Right. Yeah. And the sadness of it is that the corruption that resulted from that has kept much of the money that's supposed to go to the people, to schools, to the infrastructure, the roads, and so on, is just not getting there. So here are teachers in the public schools of Granada, where I was, who don't have any textbooks. They don't have any books to read stories to children. So
oh, Lord.
Donna Tabor is taking bags of books to teachers so they can read to them, and then they go and collect those books and take them to another teacher and bring her another bag. So there are wonderful volunteer efforts there. And I wrote this poem called Lament for Nicaragua. Step carefully with respect. The poor have laid these stones and have laid down upon them in great fatigue or the escape found in a bottle. Teenaged girls have squeezed out tiny babies on these stones or carried them home to hunger. Fathers shoulder their small glass caskets to the graveyards over these stones. The tourist cannot escape the reality of these stones, colored with the blood of the poor, every stone.
A beautiful poem. Roger, it must have been moving to be there. I was telling you that, and you told me that the two great Nicaraguan poets are Ruben Dario and Greg Simon and Stephen White. We did the selected writings about a month ago, and I think you were gone. But Ernesto Cardenal is there in the city of Granada. Granada is kind of the cultural city to invite.
It's the center, yes.
Intellectuals and poets and writers to Nicaragua.
And before he died, he and a friend acquired this building, which is a beautiful, beautiful building, and they turned it over to the arts they turned it over to the Nicaraguan people.
Sort of like a Ministry of Culture or Performing Arts Center or something.
That's right.
So this Ernesto Cardenal did that, yes.
Yes.
Okay. I've read his poetry somewhere.
Great poet.
He is. Well, let's do a little more. You have your journal here. Now, we have time, Roger. We're still going to continue with you. I mean, what...
You love the Greek connection because of your own interest in Greece, and so I like to send you there. What is your interest there?
You're asking me. That's cool. When I was a student at Portland State, I met my friend George Touliotis and others, and I worked in the Greek groceries. These were almost immigrant grocery stores that used to be in Northwest, and some of the names are still around, and some of these people have become well off as distributors and restaurateurs, but I, you know, the rock and roll club Satyricon, my friend George Tuliotis, we had poetry readings there, Doug Spangle and others, and Penny Avila and all kinds of people. But I meant in Portland then this immigrant group, you know, the
yes.
Greeks. And
yes.
My book, Journey Across America, talked about the early friendship with George and others. But I want to stay on Nicaragua and even some of your travels. You're
okay.
You're talking. You have
yes.
a son who lives in Budapest, so you're
yes.
you're starting to go around the world. You're retired. You're an internationalist, aren't
that's
you? You're
right.
doing, and that's wonderful. I feel that to hear other languages. I mean, this program is not called The Talking Earth for nothing. I named it. It's spoken word. It's the speech, and you need to hear those. We need to hear those languages. We
right.
don't need just to hear English.
That's
we,
right.
We need to hear beautiful Spanish, and we need to hear Greek and
Hungarian
and Turkish and
yes.
Hungarian and
yes.
and that's partly why your friends down there put together Poetry International. I didn't even know about it. Totopos and
yes.
I want you to read a couple more poems. And do you want to read a few things from your journal? I liked what you're talking about, the poor in Nicaragua. And
yes.
I didn't realize it was almost the poorest nation besides Haiti in the
yes,
hemisphere.
Yes, the second.
That's horrible.
Poorest.
A yeah. lot of that has to do, of course, with you know, our negative, insane American foreign policy that
that's right.
that punished these people for electing you know, a Marxist government or collective.
Well, now in Peru and and Venezuela, of
we're
course.
Starting to get the turning of the worm. The worm is saying, no, I'm not going to go.
And
with
these are democratically elected leaders. And
they
even,
are indeed.
Even though the right wing in mm-hmm. the United States doesn't care for their politics, they're too leftist for them. These are democratically elected leaders who... it's very exciting what's happening down there now.
It's extraordinarily, Chavez, in Venezuela and as you say in Bolivia and actually the woman president in Chile, you
yes.
know
there
mm-hmm. I think that hemisphere is, I hope to God, is starting to try to gain some autonomy from the big capitalist monster to the north.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a few lines from your diary that you want to keep going on Nicaragua? We
well,
haven't been there. I mean, I haven't
called
been.
This is called Al Restaurante. And
well, yeah, we have 3 or 4 minutes here.
A phone is ringing, but no one answers. Music plays, but no one listens. If you pick up the phone or listen to the music, be prepared. Your weakness for strange callers, your open feelings, has allowed the thin edge of knife's pain to enter your heart. So, actually, the pain I'm speaking of is the pain of the poor, and it's not, you know, one can be only open to that pain and respond to it in it, when one is there. It's heartbreaking. But to befriend our silence and our shadows in these poems is the shadow self I try to give voice to, the private, intimate self that writes in solitude and then becomes public, the private voice becoming public. I'm working on now this whole concept of befriending that shadow silent self that we carry about with us and within us.
I want you to still read another poem, and your comments. It's, you know, I love someone traveling like you, and then coming back with a whole notebook of ideas and experiences. And I think that we all need to travel more. We all need to become internationalists, and particularly the American people. It's time that we reached out from our own rather cloistered, privileged identity, and began, you know, bonding with other peoples in the world. And so give me either a Greek poem or give me more of your journal. You want to do one from the I tell you, read one from your book. It's called the very nice book, New and Selected Poems.
Yes.
What's the title of it again? Called
Reading the Stones.
And this is your Greek collection.
You lived
off and on in Athens for 11 years.
Well, I had a house on Paros, on an island, for 11 years.
Okay.
And
Paros.
Then I sold
Paros.
It. But I would like to close with this poem called Up Early at the Mark Spencer Hotel, which is where I stay when I come to Portland. And of course, its epigraph is Robert Frost Birch's "Earth's the Right Place for Love." It's a slide into life, this rising, a treat in discovery of a road parallel to the same destination on these streets where Jesus is the needle to mainline God. If all earth is a church, and all this back and forthing prayer, what secular sanctuaries arch over us? Every day is Sunday, every posture prayer on our knees, and sex a metaphor for inner springs. The stones I find to draw upon aren't flat, but have a turn to them, a suggestion of a shoulder or thigh. Once traced, the rest of the body follows, kneeling, leaning, or supine. Looking at them, suddenly I understand. I want to be lost, then found, like the people in the stones, like the stones themselves. Or after years of paint and varnish, like the grain of wood discovered, burnished. Thank you, Walt, for having me in tonight.
Roger Weaver, without your voice, and you're doing wonderful work. In fact, that's the beauty sometimes if one retires, and then you can really do your work. Go to Knickerbocker, get books for the children in the schools. Yeah,
that's right.
And you're doing wonderful work, and I hope the listeners tonight discover some of that. And I'm going to go out and honor some of your internationalism, but The Ladder of Desire, Roger Weaver. Will there be a reading of this book soon somewhere? Will it be somewhere soon? Or?
Oh, yes, in Corvallis.
We don't have
the date yet.
Oh, darn. Okay.
Book Browsers is wanting to have me.
Oh, Book Browsers.
And for a reading, and thank you, Walt, very much.
Roger, it's always a pleasure, and I love your work. So we're going to do musical. Thank you very much for being here, Roger Weaver. We're going to do musical chairs, so we'll put on a little bouzouki music, and we will bring the sedition folks in here. And thank you, Roger Weaver.
Thank you.
Και τρίπια παντελόνια. Γιάννησα σε σαλόνια. Ό,τι κι αν είχα σ' αυτή τη φάση, για μια γυναίκα, γυναίκα το έχω χάσει. Ως εχθές στην αριστοκρατία, για μιας γυναίκας την οργή ξημέρωσε μια χαράβγη, να ζω στην αλήθεια.
We're live here, trying to get, okay. I got him here. Stephen Alexander and Doug Posey from Sedition Magazine, say something.
Hello, thank you, Walt. Hello, how are you? Thank you so much for having us.
Well, we're doing musical chairs, but you know what's exciting is that both of you guys curated for the Mark Woolley Gallery and the Wonder Gallery, and there's still a week left to see all this marvelous work. I think we should talk about it. You curated this show called Alien and Sedition, and it will last through Saturday. Yeah, it's still up this week, so people can go there. And you had this concept, didn't you? Say something about it.
We had Alien and the Pearl at his gallery.
Okay.
The Mark Woolley Gallery.
And then we had Sedition at the Wonder Ballroom at the Mark Woolley Gallery. And the whole theme was alien and sedition acts.
We're talking about the government. And,
exactly.
And how do citizens confront their government, which is...
We started this magazine that comes from the Alien and Sedition
Act.
Oh,
you brought it here tonight. Oh,
and we brought you a copy, Walt. This one is yours personally. It's for you.
Now, is this the only copy in existence, or will they be on sale?
Hey, now, see, there's a few copies here and there and everywhere. They are free, so they're not on sale. So bear with us if you can't get one, because we're trying to deliver them to you everywhere.
Literally, we print them every day.
But so off your computer, your personal computer, your home computer?
Absolutely.
Home
printer, home computer, this is what we do. It is not a zine. It is certainly a magazine.
No one's giving you a grant. It looks beautiful.
We are working on a grant. Can I jump in here really quick and thank the Rake Art Group, who we've just partnered with? So now
Talk about them.
Please. One group nonprofit, the Rake Art Group and Sedition Magazine. We may or may not have a new name. We will see. The magazine will always be Sedition Magazine, but we will be one nonprofit entity with wonderful grant writers who we will be looking for grants with.
By the way, we're actually now located on 6th and Flanders, right there in Chinatown. Mm-hmm. And we've fully merged with Rake Gallery. Jeremy is amazing. Thank you, Jeremy.
Oh, that's Jeremy. Jeremy Tucker. He works at the Pearl Woolley Gallery.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
So, you guys had some kind of event over there, didn't you? Yeah.
Quite a few.
We had a couple. First Thursday in June was amazing. Thank you for everyone that
and
came out.
And you had a fashion show?
We had a fashion show called
Was that for
Stitch.
Gay Pride? No, what was it for?
The Gay Pride fashion show was the next day.
We actually it carried over from a piece that we did in the first issue called The Stitch, which was all local kind of creative, self-expressive, fashionable people on the street. Just a large piece that we did. Went out with photographers, took their pictures, did small interviews with them. And put it in the first issue. And so it carried on into, this whole self-expression,
Amazing.
Topic.
Number one, I'm looking at you. You're amazing.
Thank you all.
The only thing I'm angry about, but I didn't get to see the magazine. So you got the one copy in your hand.
We got you. This is your copy.
And you're going to read from when I can't see it.
We actually have, three excerpts that we're going to give you.
Oh, well, let's go for one. Who wants to start?
Let's do one.
In lieu of the last segment of the show and everything.
I think we'll start with Wheelchairs and Morphine, which is by Mike Marino. And by the way, pretty much everything in this magazine is all local contribution. Mm. Very, very little of it is just our own words and thoughts.
This is amazing, guys. I'm very proud of you. This is amazing. Okay, go for it. Give us a taste so we don't just turn into talking heads here. Okay, go for it.
All righty. So this is called Wheelchairs and Morphine, and it's by Mike Marino. Nobody ever sees it coming. Nobody ever hears it coming. Now, like then, it marches and comes, then lies of peace. The march to war, to the cadence of drums. He sat in his tank, head pounding, held in his hands. Then Hanoi, now Baghdad. Steamy jungles of nothing and oil-rich sand, red, white, blue eagles. America, proud. Soon flags draped the coffins and turned into shrouds. Close his eyes and can see his family back home, playing and praying. Trust in America, carved in stone. A baby sister and mom, a family. He loved them all, but when he opened his eyes, he could only see his own reflection staring back. Soon a name etched in a memorial wall. German and Japan. Hiroshima in Berlin, Seoul in Korea, and the Viet Minh. Some wars we lose and others we win. The left and right split into fractions. While we cry for the dead and the missing in action. VA hospitals locked and loaded with vets. Patriots all with bodies and minds in battered mess. Legs and arms missing and vacant eye socket stares. All in the name of God and the rocket's red glare. The politicians get fatter, the enemies get mean, while the heroes ride in wheelchairs and feast on great meals of morphine. They fought the Nazis, Asians, Iraqis, and Reds. Now they fight their own demons, loaded on government meds. The politicians parade the heroes, march in parades. Wave high the flags. The silent dead, unceremoniously tossed in a landfill of sinking body bags. Give the family of Posthumus Medal of Valor to silence dissent. A 21-gun salute to compensate for innocent gone. Youth lost and spent, the president spoke to next of kin. They died for a cause, damn it. They cause the cause of the rich. Sorry your kids are dead, ma'am. Poor son of a bitch. But look at the bright side, he said with a laugh. Hell, today they're all volunteers. Ain't no draft. You're for us or against us, cried out the president. Never saw battle himself. Hid in the bushes, and hated dissent. A few more men, a few more guns, just a few more kids dead, and this damn war will be won. Then it was apocalypse now. Now it was apocalypse then. Mirror images today of broken bodies, flesh and blood men. The politicians hide, cowards and afraid. Let the children bleed to keep alive their charade. World wars, one, two, one way or the other. Victory or defeat, someone gets screwed. Imperial Hiroshima, to rice paddy Vietnam, atomic energy and burning napalm. Today it's red blood for democracy's oil. The beat. Yeah, the beat. It goes on. The soldier fondled the trigger of his automatic weapon, ready to shoot, even kill. The barrage then stopped. Silence. Once again, it was still. He knew there was still a long road ahead, still plenty of room to fill Arlington with dead. Soon his name would be up, and he'd rotate back home, to another time and another space. For now, he was stuck between Iraq and a hard place, war. What is good? What is it good for? Like the song says, absolutely nothing. Say it again. Say it again.
Bravo! And was this young man? Was he a vet, Mike Marino? Or yeah.
He was not. He was actually a Haight Ashbury.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh.
Mainstay.
Right, he goes back for decades. And
absolutely. He actually sent us an email when we were started, and he said he tipped his proletarian hat to us. And he just appreciated the name of the magazine and what we were trying to do in terms of trying to bridge young.
Well, before we read another, give me some of the idea of what's in this new Sedition magazine. Now, you've got this gentleman from Haight-Ashbury, and you've got, keep telling, just give us a few thumbnails.
Okay, so this is volume one, and we basically wanted to establish the premise of our magazine and our publishing company in that it is an arts magazine. We publish poetry, prose, short fiction, and visual works of art.
I see visual works of art, yeah.
Media.
It looks beautiful, yeah.
Well, thank you, thank you. And the idea behind the name, everyone asks, Sedition Magazine, is it a political magazine? And the answer is no, but everything in your life is political. And
So yes. I mean,
absolutely. And I think artists can speak that in a way that is more clear than most people will normally discuss.
No, Mark Woolley is very proud of both of you. He's delighted to have had you curate, you know, these shows, which are still up till Saturday at the Wonder Ballroom and at the Wonder Ballroom location,
absolutely,
120 Northeast Russell, and at the Pearl Mark Woolley Gallery in the Pearl District at what?
I think it's 9th and
9th and something. Yeah,
9th and Davis. It's actually 120 Northwest.
What I find amazing is that you guys are sort of, your spirits are very alive. I mean, this is really a quite a project to take on. You guys aren't that old. I'm going to say that. I mean, that's not a ageist remark, but you work together, and this is really important to you, isn't it? Yeah.
This is what we do, and we thank you for understanding that this is what we do and for letting us come here and share this with you.
Oh, no. This is a community radio station, but did you grow up in Portland? Just give us a little
sketch. Personally, I was born at Emmanuel Hospital. Thank you, Mom, if you're listening.
Okay, you're a Portland kid. Okay, good.
And, but Doug was a military kid.
I was a military kid. I'm a transplant. I moved here late in the year 2000, and I've been looking for home since I was a small child, and finally found it in Portland and found a place where I felt comfortable trying to share my creativity and my thoughts with the community.
I wish this were a television show so people could see it. You're going to go along. You're going to do great. Give me another couple of things that are in here, though. Just name a few things.
Awesome. I think next what we're going to read.
Okay. Let me move to this.
Okay.
And I'm only going to read a short portion of it. A lot of these are long.
No, you have prose pieces. You have a lot of prose pieces.
Prose pieces, short essays, things like this. So I'm going to read. This is kind of like a short interlude into our lives by a writer that we all know and love named Elliot H. Harris. And I'm just going to break in right in the middle of this.
Okay.
So I lie there on my sweating side, trying to decide what to do with the terror that I've got banging at my back. And she's sleeping there so silently. And this puddle that's got me surrounded, a prisoner in bed and freezing. The girl likes to sleep with the window open. Torturous, wicked thing. Only a nitwit number than myself would say so. She may be our ticket out, the way home. And clammed, freezing, the tightening of the abdominal to battle the shiver, and it's pitch black and I'm terrified. I don't remember anymore if I'd seen it awake or sleep, but it was there, and it was again, and I knew it wasn't going good in the beginning. When Sam asked if he should break in or not, and not was no good, 'cause Friday and we hadn't had a thing. And the caps were only on the other side of that wall, he said, and that our future is in there, man. And then we were on the highway sailing into the future without a doubt, climbing upward and up, and so I never call him wrong. A festival on the mountain, and it was, and all the drunks and the highs and the wonky nitwits finally had a party of their own, and we were there. Nice to be away from the city for a night. I'm over the bar brats anyway. We should head out there, I was telling myself. Sam was already on the way there, windows down, cold air fresh, wet, clean, blasting me in the face, and music, man alive, music. Blaring from that shiny silver Volkswagen Beetle and a festival on the mountain, and it did feel. When I walked toward the car at the gas station after taking a piss and buying a few bottles of wine for the trip through the forest before it breaks on the other side to reveal the late fall mountaintop, as though we were in a past future. The Beetle, but it was shiny, and the festival, but it was breakbeats, and the hippies aren't hippies anymore, but weird as forever, and the mushrooms were starting to take the top of my head off. And I knew that I'd better sit there quiet and drink a bottle of wine so that Sam wouldn't start freaking while we were driving up the mountain.
Mount Hood.
Mount Hood, that is, yeah.
Okay, this is the real stuff, Ogie.
but who knows?
There's literary license, they call it, imagination license. Yeah, but
absolutely. So I'm going to break a bit further, and we're going to come to the end of this thing.
Well, you're not at the end yet. We have 8 or 10 minutes. Go ahead. Give us a little more. And
we actually have one more for you. That's why we're cutting this.
Okay. Doug Posey and Stephen Alexander.
Thank you so much, Walt.
Well, thank you so much. And you're now involved with Jeremy at the, do it again, the Rafe? Is it Rafe?
The Rake. R-A-K-E.
I always think rape, Rafe. I always think weird.
It's on 6th and Flanders.
It's like rake, like you garden rake.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And we've kind of been a family prior to now.
Okay.
We're just making it official.
Making it official now. Okay. And word has it there is a monster show coming up for next month. So
well, give approximate date.
Out for first Thursday for
so this
July.
Gallery has all kinds of events. I mean, you know, musical.
Events. They did a film for Red Door Films last week that I heard was amazing, Tibetan Medicine in Exile.
Oh, wow.
Absolutely.
Oh. And yeah, there was a Tibetan festival in town, and mm-hmm. so they brought that in. So mm-hmm. so Rake Gallery now is has a variety of things, everything from dance to fashion show to
publishing now.
To publishing now.
Yeah, we are
I
there.
Mean, my it's office is literally
magazine.
In the back.
Edition magazine. Okay.
Absolutely. Okay. And so we'll break into the second half of this thing, and this is only excerpts from this. So keep an eye out. Go to seditionmagazine.com. There is a full version available for download
online.
For anyone who's interested.
Okay, online. Sedition.
Okay. Mind's moving away too much a minute, but can hardly walk, can hardly see, focus, step, watch out for rocks, ditches, combatives, focus, step, so cold, tighten abdominal, no shiver, focus, step, see, rock, dirt, and pile, sit there, focus, step, easy now, almost there, focus, sit, almost where, why am I here? And the diamond slowly downward over the entire scene, and I see things now. I understand the world, economy, war, poor, race, religion, transportation, and petroleum, and it's all palatable this way. Hear the music, the buzz, talking trees, breathing cities, humming, and it's all in the music. Then it's broken, and I can't. Here, take this, and it's this blonde little lady gnome, and her accent sounds Euro, but I can't tell where. So I put out my hand, and this time I knew that it wouldn't end soon, so I just keep going. Where are you from? You look cold. and she sat next to me, and we sat there, knees to chest, next to each other, looking from about 15 feet up, down on the whole thing. I babbled at her for a while, but her face told me that I wasn't making any sense, and that she was, looking for a lay, and I couldn't, even if I want. I knew what I was looking for on the other side of that wall, but this time I was swinging at a bumblebee with a battle axe, and I knew it. So the German lady gnome wandered off in combat boots, black Carhartt cutoffs, and a black t-shirt, and it seemed that it was all her skin, hair, clothes, boots, the same color of gray. Like I could see her clothes black and her hair blonde, but everything was gray. I sat wondering for a while what she gave me, but it was too cold and I had lost all concept of time. So I wandered back to where the 1,000 or so cars were parked, and I remember drawing a map in my head because I knew it would come off soon. I piss, find it, and it's locked, so I sleep, balled up against the tires, hoping that they would come back and take me away from this place, and the city will surround me. Leaving wasn't a good idea. I've got to figure it. There's no way around that. Sleep, dirt, dusty, sweat-caked sleep, and then they come back, wonder why, and snicker and poke at me a bit, but I think it's come back together, so I wrestle them back a minute, and we all leave.
Okay. did you ever write yourselves, or did you do hip hop? Just give me some little cultural history.
Oh, hip hop, huh? Well,
no, but did,
do
did
we look like those hip hop stars?
Your dreadlocks aren't bad, but you don't have any, so I don't know. No, but I mean, this cultural stuff, you know, and I'm kind of a, and I wouldn't say a nitwit, but a kind of a lame-o on this stuff. But I mean, did you perform? Now you have a great voice,
well,
Doug, and Stephen's good too. So did you read stuff out loud? Do you have any poetic heroes or literary heroes? I mean, is that a dumb question?
That would be more Doug than myself.
A literary hero, I can say I've got many. Saul Williams being one currently who moves me constantly. But
okay.
In terms of this project that we're working on, I've got to say Dave Eggers and the people at McSweeney's. I went and saw him speak at Wordstock, and a woman asked a question in the Q&A period and asked him, Dave, when's the best time to start a small press? And he looked at the crowd and he said, there's no better time than now. And I went home knowing that we had started a small press literally a month and a half before and knew that it was the right thing.
Well, you know, what's great about it, it's online. I mean, you've got physical copies and they can download. And, you know, if they want to use their printer inks up and everything,
absolutely.
But you didn't need a lot of money, do you? Because it's online.
Yeah, read it on the screen.
It's seditionmagazine.com.
Seditionmagazine.com.
It's really simple.
And the content, it's almost all content, very few ads. Mm-hmm. But that's also why our distribution is low.
Yeah.
So any of you out there who would love to get in on a new project that's amazing and bringing the art world together here in Portland locally, contact us.
Well, you know what might be fun, if you can get something at Powell's or some other. I mean, so you had, I missed the, you were going to read from this or do something at probably Rake Gallery.
Absolutely.
Did you show it off? I mean, people might want to, and some of the contributors you see might want, you know, you might gather five or six of them.
Absolutely.
I mean,
absolutely.
We drop them at each of our shows, mm-hmm. which are usually at Rake.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, okay.
We're other places around town. We have physical copies. We're looking to put them out in coffee shops, restaurants, bookstores, and the like. But
Powell's has got to take some. But Rake Gallery, where's that located now?
That is 625 Northwest 6th Avenue on the Everett Station blocks. Sedition,
right,
Publishing,
near the Everett. There's a bunch of little galleries around Everett.
Absolutely. And Rake is actually, don't mistake it, it is unaffiliated, I believe, with the Everett Lofts Galleries, but actually bought a space in the building. And we are in with them now. We love them. They have been wonderful with us from the start. And like Stephen was saying, we've just now legitimized our family relationship with them and moved in at Rick.
And we actually, like...
Yeah, Stephen,
In closing... I would like to read Unfinished Work, but before that, thank you to Rake, thank you to Mark Woolley, and both of your galleries.
Backspace, thank you for supporting us.
Yeah,
so amazing. Entertainment, can I say, Everett?
Everett, thank you.
Thank you.
And so there's still a week now, just to finish this gallery thing. I mean, I've got a thing in there. I've got two paintings in there.
Thank you for submitting to our show.
Well, one is called Peace, and we have Peace is the most seditious concept in a fascist militarist society. The democracy and lifeblood of our nation is being wasted on defense budgets, blah, blah, blah. My painting shows Jesus Christ in the garb of an Arab in the Middle East, raising his hands in supplication for peace. He is being crucified by bullets from U.S. soldiers. As a Palestinian, he is dying from Israeli weapons. I swear Yasser Arafat and Jesus Christ have a lot in common. I got hammered walking in the door.
I was standing
yeah,
next to
yeah,
you.
Yeah, that was
I
a very heated, heated show.
Well, you know, it was to all kinds of points of view are in this in these two exhibits that are still up.
And I knew that show was successful when we came in and there were people talking so heatedly over it.
Yeah, you all got to go see it. And so Wooly at the Wonder is 120 Northeast Russell, and I guess they're open Tuesday through this Saturday before the show changes. And then and then Mark Wooly Gallery in the Pearl is, here it is, 120 Northwest 9th. So, you know, you guys, I think what's intriguing about you seem to be in such a learning mode. Wow. So, you know,
that's what it is. We've honestly taught ourselves graphic design, marketing.
You're just swinging, you're whirling like a tornado
We're trying to soak it up, Walt, and we've got to thank you right now. I'm learning right now, and I want to thank you.
Have you been on radio before?
So yeah. Much.
One other time.
Thanks, Julie Bernard. Yeah. Mark brought us on.
Julie Bernard is
we love her. Amazing.
Yeah, you were on Art Focus. So what's this poem you're going to read?
So the last one I think we're going to do, which kind of is our anthem, and I think it may be forever.
Can I give it a little introduction? This is a testament.
This is you guys' friendship, brotherhood. You guys remind me of brothers.
This testament to what we do. Stephen is my brother.
You'll understand as soon as we read
it. Now you're using the word family. I mean,
Jeremy is family.
Aren't those concepts, though? I mean, what wonderful concepts in a community.
Another family member of ours who handed me this on a piece of notebook paper when we first started this project and knew that we would never finish it. Gave me this
thought that we would never finish it.
As just motivation. Like, thank you, Jeff Bailey. He's in Seoul, Korea right now. He can't hear this, but we love you. Thank you. And
so we'll go from here. And I'm not used to reading poetry.
Oh,
so
you're doing great, Stephen. You're doing great.
Thank you. And it's called Unfinished Work by Jeff Bailey. It wasn't clear at first. The unfinished defined my work. Failed attempts, changes of heart, and imposed criticism made me realize I haven't finished a thing. We might think for an instant that work is completed. The half-written poems are usually written as they will be, thus finished. Perhaps our ideas of complete, no matter the stage. But I think not. I'll turn my 6 pages, double-spaced, properly formatted, and those that can will deem it complete. The task is done, but far from finished. To me, finished carries weight, like it exists in itself. It's right. It's finished. It's good. It's fair. It's finished. One can't use such words to describe our work or thoughts or creations, because something is published doesn't mean it's good or fair or right. Just like by the end of this poem, it will not be finished. I will be done because I can't remember the last thought that should have gone here. I will be done because I might think it's all been said. Still, I'm all right with that. Try to imagine all our work is missing something, even after we have thought we found it, because the most important thing is knowing we felt when we were looking at it, when we were looking for it.
The fulfillment, you guys I see just as having an amazing future in the city. And so Doug Posey and Stephen Alexander, this is great. See the Alien and Sedition show through the rest of the week and seditionmagazine.com and Rake Gallery. Okay, online. Great to have you here and much success, okay?
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
I think we'll go back to the Bouzouki music, the Talking Earth, and you guys are the reason that this show happened. So thanks a lot for being here tonight.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Τραβώ με ένα παραπώ, με πικρό. Και λέω δεν πειράζει. Ο κόσμος ας φωνάζει. Ό,τι κι αν είχα σ' αυτή τη κλάση, για μια γυναίκα, γυναίκα.
Follow the yellow brick road.
Follow the yellow brick road. Follow the yellow brick road.
Coming to the KBOO radio airwaves Monday, July 3rd at 11 p.m. The Capitalist Manifesto meets the Wizard of Oz.
George W. Bush is the scarecrow without a brain.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
The rest of his administration are the heartless tins woodsmen, and the Democrats are the cowardly lions who lack a spine.
The Ubu Hour Radio Theater Show brings you the Capitalist Manifesto.
Meets the Wizard of Oz.
Coming to the KBOO airwaves Monday, July 3rd at 11 p.m.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.